you wanna be.
Tell me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people. Ghetto people.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion. You name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner. and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you. I hope you had a good weekend, the so-called holiday weekend. And I hope you had a chance to be with a lot of good family and friends and break bread. And if you went to church, so be it. If you didn't go to church, so be it. But I hope it was safe, and I hope you had a chance to do all the things that you wanted to do, need to do, should do, better do, can do, must do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, you did it anyway. So all praise to you. Continue to do it. Continue to stand up, rise up, and handle your business. This is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives. Thank you, my good brother, Kwaku, and of course, Brother Elliot from Time for an Awakening. So you can go to timeforanawakening.com, and on the right side of it, of the page, scroll down till you see the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed on it, and click that, and then follow the directions, and you can listen to previously recorded programs that are titled and dated. Today, Monday, Acres of Diamonds this evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Program out of Philadelphia. Right after that, 8 p.m. to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. I'm looking forward to his program tomorrow night. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Revive. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, as we like to say, or no. Family-centered economics. That's what we like to say, family-centered economics. And, of course, you can check out Cafe Ulu. It is a cooperative. That means people pull their monies together, put that together, and created Cafe Ulu here in Atlanta, 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza. Open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., and on Saturdays and Sundays, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. check out Cafe Ulu, where we specialize in coffee. That's our thing, coffee. And we have Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenyan, Ethiopian. I believe we got some Panamanian and some Brazilian coffees. So we're going to be known for coffee. And if you want to check out some documentation, go to inthesetimes.com, inthesetimes.com, and put in the search, Drink Your Coffee Black Owned. It's an article on Us Lifting Us and Cafe Ulu. So check that out, Cafe Ulu. Drink in these times.com. Drink Your Coffee Black Owned. So check that out. And once again, Us Lifting Us every Thursday from 9 p.m. to 11, or 9 p.m. until. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's time for an awakening. Yes, it is, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, on Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it's not me. It's Sister POC. That's right, Revive, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, Time for an Awakening, 7 p.m. Good program last night. I listened. Brother had on Dr. Jared Ball of Morgan State University in Baltimore. Very good discussion. And I tell you, very enlightening. And I tried to call in while he was on, but of course he had to leave. But I had a few things to say, a few things to talk about with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, you know, because we're talking about in the discussion what's happening and what's not happening in terms of our preparations, in terms of our situation and so forth here. And I think most of the people would understand, at least they have a clear understanding, that it's doesn't look good. And to me, if it doesn't look good, and we've been begging and pleading for years and for decades, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that's what we have been doing. The same thing over and over. Our leadership, and I know Wednesday we're going to talk about Dr. King, and I'm going to talk with my good brother, Brother Franklin Jones, who's on Wednesdays with me, and we're going to give some perspective on Dr. King, say some few things you may or may not know, but it marks the 50th year of the assassination by this government, by Dr. Martin Luther King. See, when he was living, he was vilified, he was demonized, he was hated. J. Edgar Hoover called him public enemy number one. And then, of course, when he's dead, then all these accolades and all these praise, and then even a national holiday, all the things that he talked about as a person dealing with nonviolence. He tried to do the same thing to Malcolm, but, you know, vilified him. The government killed him. The Nation of Islam made it possible, helped create the atmosphere by the government to be able to kill him. But let's go on with the announcements. Let me continue to do that. Once again, April 14th this month, a few days away. The 21st Century Black Survival Conference here in Atlanta at the Shrine of Black Madonna. It's brought to you by Straight Black Pride. And we're dealing with three areas of spirituality, culture, and survival. The spirituality component will be taken by the master teacher, and truly a master teacher, Ashua Kwesi. He'll talk about African history and spirituality, the origins of the Bible and Quran. Culture will be handled by Baba Mwalimu Baruti. And, you know, I love Brother Mwalimu Baruti. Baba Baruti's outstanding brother. He'll talk about the importance of developing a warrior's character. Survival will be the irritated genie of Straight Black Pride, irritated genie, African survival in the 21st century. So check out that conference. I'm going to have somebody on soon to talk about that in more detail. In more detail, no doubt about it. And also, too, there's another conference a week after. I'll be in Baltimore for a firefighters conference. But there's another conference in D.C. And heard it on, of course, Time for an Awakening when Malik Zulu Shabazz was on. And so we'll definitely give you more information about that. And I may have the time because, you know, Baltimore and D.C., is right there next to each other. It's only like 20 minutes away from downtown Baltimore to downtown D.C., I guess, something around that fact. I know I've been there a few times. So I've read the African Sovereignty Interpretation of the Nguza Saba. I know the Nguza Saba is around Kwanzaa, and this ain't Kwanzaa time, but the Nguza Saba was not about Kwanzaa time. It was not about December 26th to January 1st. The Nguza Saba were principles to be instilled into our everyday lives. And so my good friend, Dr. Marimba Ani, came up with the African Sovereignist Interpretation of the Nguza Saba. African self-government. Akujiwale. The first principle of the Nguza Saba, of course, is umoja, unity. The pan-Africanist vision of African people throughout the world, joining forces to fight for African sovereignty and to build an African world order. Last night's discussion, I was talking about after, like I said, brother, I was hoping to ask him that question, but I had some good conversation, always do, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and I'm coming from a pan-Africanist perspective. Because, see, this program, we talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. We believe that there is no other discussion. In fact, if we ain't talking about that, we ain't talking about nothing. And it's not about a debate. I feel it's crazy to debate, particularly us. And I don't even want to debate Caucasians. It ain't about no damn debate. But particularly us, it's crazy, it's ludicrous to debate whether we should be free or not, independent and self-determining and sovereign. The discussion should be about how do we achieve it? What are the steps? What are the methodology? How do we make that manifest so we can be a people who are whole, a people who are self-loving, a people who are truly self-determining in terms of what our destiny is going to be. Kujichagulia, self-determination. African people defining ourselves and determining our own destiny as a sovereign people. Didn't I just say that? I sure did. But not only did I just say it, we mean it. Ujima, collective work and responsibility. African people working together, being responsible to and for each other and accepting a common system of accountability. You know, if we say what we're going to do, we should be men and women of our word and do it. But also, too, we must develop a system where we truly are accountable, where we truly have some checks and balances in terms of our progress. Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, creating economic cooperatives based on the concept of African familyhood, interdependence, interrelationships, and community, national, and global African unity. We develop it for African people globally, country, state, city, county, region, whatever, wherever we are, that's how we deal with it. Familyhood, pulling our resources together and building and doing for ourselves. NIA, purpose, African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guide our choices and decisions. This gives purpose to our lives and to our work and tells us why we were born African. We were born African. And I know that because of what has happened, I like the commercial for African ancestry because it shows this high yellow sister, you know, or light skin sister, whatever you want to say. But she's proud of being African, and she's proud to know that she comes from so many percent of Nigerian or whatever. And she talks about her ancestors because that's the reality for now of our people. Because of the hundreds of years, because of the hundreds of years of our condition and our situation, Kumba. Onia, purpose. African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guides our choices and decisions. This gives us purpose for our lives and our work and tells us why we were born African. Kumba, creativity, to think with African minds and to create from our African center. When we practice this principle, we no longer imitate non-Africans. We make our own way. We don't copy no damn body. Let me just say this. If we see something that is good and that will be beneficial for Africans, there it is. But we ain't taking it because you know why? We were the first people. We gave the world. Everybody copied from us. Imani, faith, to believe in the vision of African sovereignty and to have the passion and the will, the heart, to bring it into being. That's what we need to do, to have that will to bring it into being. So those are those principles that I'm going to be reading from time to time, once every month or so, to help us keep us focused and moving in the right direction. Sad news, Winnie Mandela passed at age 81, the South African queen. Mama Winnie has passed at 81. She stood by Nelson. She worked with Nelson. She kept it going. I know there were some other issues that happened with her, supposedly. I don't know, but I'll say this. I admire her tremendously for her strength and her willingness. She's right up there with sisters who were strong women. She's right up there. So much praise to her ancestor, Sister Winnie Mandela. And, we got a call so early. That's a good thing. 646, good morning, caller.
Hey, what's happening, Brother Oshi? It's Brother Jay. I was just calling in to mention about that Queen Sister Winnie, man. It's a shame we lost her, Brother. That was a warrior sister, man.
That's right. I agree. She's a warrior sister. She's one of those queens in the spirit of Yah Santiwa in Zinga. She's one of those warrior queens, one of the sisters that will continue to fight to the last breath. And I respect and admire her so for her tenacity, and she will truly be missed.
Yes, man. I mean, she showed the type of strength and courage that a woman is supposed to show to lead a nation and a people, man. The way that she dealt with the Yorugus, man, it was powerful. It was nothing they could do to break her, man. And that just shows the amazingness, man, of that sister, man. I mean, it's a sad day that we lost her.
Yeah.
Because it's so few out there like her, man, that will step up and do the necessary things to promote the people, man, and to just deal, you know, because you could imagine what they did to her over all of that time that they had Nelson in jail. You know, it was like she was in jail too,
right?
But just a little bit freer on the open, you know what I mean? But they basically tortured that sister, man.
Yeah.
And the thing that I admired most about her was she never wanted African people to not have power. She didn't become like her husband. She didn't want to share power. She wanted power. She didn't believe in forgiveness, man. And, right. And that's what I respect most about her. She was not going to allow that cracker to get away with what he did to her people and not have to suffer some sort of consequences. I remember the time when they had that farce of a truth and reconciliation thing going on, man.
Right.
And she basically said it was a sham.
It's a sham.
It was a joke. And, yeah. And man, that made me feel so good because, I mean, all of those people that did harm to us, all they had to do is come in and say what they did and then they could just walk. That's like madness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's madness.
And
but,
then,
you know,
and
that's,
then,
how,
and then,
that's how we operate.
Right.
Because I don't care what nobody say. Nelson Mandela suffered from Stockholm Syndrome.
He
at
sold
the
out.
Highest level.
Yeah, he sold out. He sold out. Yeah.
He gave up.
Yeah, he sold out. He was presented a scenario that he took, and I believe that's why too him and Winnie, you know, once he got out, you see the iconic pictures and video of them, you know, when he gets out and they're marching and, you know, hand in hand going. But right after that, they split because the deal was he made a deal. He made a deal with the Caucasian. That's why South Africa is going through what it's going through right now. Nelson, the deal was, listen, we'll get you out. You can take the politics and you even can be president. We don't give a damn. But we want to control the mineral wealth, the money, and the military. To me, if you are in control of the money and you're in control of the military, hell, you in control. I don't give a damn how many dark faces you have in a high place. It doesn't make a difference. You are in control. And that's why even today, the South Africans are in control. Now, of course, they're going through this thing, and I love it, where they're saying, you know, we're taking back our land and you will not be compensated for it. Well, since that time, number one, Australia has said we will take those Caucasians whose land has been taken and will not been compensated for it. We'll make some special provision for immigration for them. But then also, too, the United States, the EU, and Australia said we're going to impose strict economic sanctions on South Africa if they talk about taking white folks' land and not compensating them for it, you see. So, you know, I don't care what kind
you've
of threat.
You've been through apartheid. You had economic sanctions against you at that time. Your people did. African people did. So, I mean, let white folks suffer through economic sanctions. Let them see how it feels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The bottom line is, it's our right to have the land.
Yeah.
We're the only people on the planet who allow someone to come into our house, take our stuff, rape our women, and then give them forgiveness.
Yeah.
I don't know if nobody else would allow that type of nonsense.
No.
And we wonder why we in the condition that we in. I mean, I just love the burning necktie. That's the way they should be treated.
The necklace,
with the burning necktie.
That's right. They put that tire on your neck, man, and light it up,
and light it up, baby. Because the bottom line is, you can't never be a free people if you don't have control of the resources of the land.
Yes,
that's why Africa is in the position that it is.
Exactly,
because we don't control the resources of the land.
And
once
see,
we control the resources of the land, then we can do what we got to do.
See, that's,
then we'll be free.
See,
then we'll be in the position to rule again.
And Jay,
until then, it ain't gonna happen.
That's why, Jay, I'm so adamant about a pan-Africanist philosophy, a pan-African mindset, a pan-African implementation of our situation. Last night, I know I heard you on with Brother Jared Ball, and you know, because I listened, and to me, he made some good points, but all of the stuff that he said about, you know, redistribution of wealth and this, that, that's not going to happen in America.
That's socialism.
Right. That's not going to happen. Not in America. America doesn't have the will to do what's right. Truly, he's correct that America has the wealth, that every person in this country doesn't have to be hungry, doesn't have to be homeless. You don't have to have Skid Row like you do in L.A. I don't know if you saw, I've just seen a documentary, yep. A recent one, about the proliferation of Skid Row in Los Angeles, right in
it's
sight of the... It is. It really is. It's unbelievable. And I was in L.A. back in November, and I rode through there. I rode through there.
Hey, let me ask you this. When you rode through there, was it really people out there living in tents?
Yes. Yes.
Well, the majority was Yoruba's, right?
No.
Oh,
no. The majority is us and, I don't know what you want to call them, Chicanos, Latinos, Hispanics, and
Baba
then
Luis.
Caucasians.
Then I call them Baba Louis.
Some Baba Louis, if that's what you want to call them. Baba Louis. But, you know, El Cabong, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
Quick Draw McGraw and his pal Baba Louie. But listen,
now, I call them Baba Louie. Yeah. That's how I refer to them. Well, you know, I used to use wetbacks, but I had to show them a little more sympathy. So now I just call them Baba Louie.
Okay.
The most dangerous person against black folks there is, if the truth be told.
But the thing is this: they are out there. And, of course, I mean, there are some who are just truly down on luck. Is there some mental illness? You know damn right there's some mental illness. Is there some other physical ailments? You damn right there is. But the reality is it shouldn't be that way in supposedly in this country. But it is that way, and it will continue to be that way when you have a country built on greed, individualism,
yeah,
materialism.
You left out, OC, there's people out there, too, that got jobs.
Yes. Yes.
A great portion of
yes.
Got jobs,
yes, because they can't afford. They may have yep. one or two jobs because they ain't paying nothing. They can't afford yep. housing when housing, especially in L.A., especially on both coasts, it is very expensive. Very expensive. You're talking about thousands of dollars for rent for a small place.
That's in San Francisco.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's ridiculous. Northern California is ridiculous. But all of it is. Everything is so out of whack. And see, the deal is that the compensation for those who truly have so damn much has been, I mean, just growing leaps and bounds, while wages have been stagnant for damn near 20 years. This is a selfish, greedy country. This is a selfish, greedy world. And the perpetrators of that are Europeans. Europeans made a design that they were going to take over the world. They said, we made war amongst ourselves, but when it comes to those who are outside of us, we're going to band together and subdue and control those who are outside of us. And that is what has happened. They came in and right. They didn't negotiate. They didn't barter. They didn't do none of that. They just took it. And then they gave you a religion. And if you didn't accept it, if you didn't bow down to the mores of what they were bringing, they killed you.
That's it.
That's it. Either you capitulate or accept, or you're going to be dead. And then, of course.
The thing is, it's not getting no better. It's not to the point to where as they're becoming more humane. And I think last night, Jared was just talking more or less of an ideal situation. I don't know if he truly believes in that or
right,
not.
Right, no. I'm quite sure he does.
That's not practical.
No, and you're right. That's what he was talking about. What could be idealistic in terms of what could happen? No, I know that. I'm quite sure of that. At least I've heard him speak a couple of times. And
He's my favorite mulatto.
Huh?
He's my favorite mulatto.
Is that right? Okay, then, Jay.
And listen, I done heard a lot of mulattoes in my day. He's one of the clear ones, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Too many mulattoes talk like he do,
yeah.
bro.
Well, I don't really consider myself a mulatto, though. My father, who I never knew, was a very light-skinned man as an entertainer, but my mother's a dark-skinned woman, you know.
Same here with me, brother.
Yeah.
I tell you, I don't know if I told you this story, man. I did not what nothing to do with my father till I was maybe around 10 years old because I thought he was white. And I lived in the house. I lived in the house with him, man. It was just something about the situation. I didn't want him to come to school with me. I didn't want to hold his hand out in the street.
Yeah.
None of that stuff. Because I thought in my African mind, I knew at an early age that the cracker was no damn good.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I had it up in my house, but the same situation. I used to think my father was white. If you look at him, he was so light. He could pass for you, Google.
Oh, no doubt about it. I have one picture of my father. He was an entertainer. And believe me, he looked white. You know, the wavy hair.
And mother's dark just like yours.
Yep.
So I know exactly what you're saying. And the funny thing is, man, until he passed, we were real, real tight. But, I mean, the whole thing was, I know, until about 8 or 9 years, I didn't want him coming to school for me. I didn't want him picking me up or none of that stuff.
Yeah.
And he used to wonder, why, what was the problem, you know? But, yeah. Hey, that's the reality. And I feel that way about crackers still.
Today.
I don't want him in my house.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around him. You know what I mean? I say very little as possible to him, and I don't give him no break. You get out of line with me, you got a real serious problem. Quickness. I don't play that. I don't play that game because I don't see too many people shuffle and pat them on the heads and all of that stuff. And the worst culprit of them, to me, is the Haitians and the Baba Louis, man.
Mm.
The way they act around them, it makes me sick, man. And that's why I don't mess with them at all.
Yeah.
That Haitian, man, they may be the worst.
Really?
They may be the worst. And don't run across no Baba Louis that's under the impression that he's a Yoruba. Oh, they suck.
Of course.
Woo.
Of course.
Woo.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to work with them, and you got to see how they interact with them, how they suck up to them, and how they just go along with everything they say to them, never challenge them or nothing, man. That's why, you know,
there may be some Caucasians. I met some Caucasians, and I worked with some Caucasians that were decent people. They're okay. But they would not be.
They're decent.
They're
That's
decent.
About it.
Right,
decent.
Right. They're decent people, you know. But the bottom line is there would be not one damn thing that they would do to dismantle or deconstruct the system that has been created that favors them. That is shaped and fashioned in their image and in their interest. So that's that reality.
But why would you?
Right.
But honestly,
right.
Why would you?
You
why
know,
would you? And you know, that's what makes them so dangerous.
But see, being in an interracial
relationship so dangerous because at some point in time, the truth to be told, don't you think they're going to pick their side? Because
yeah,
I know I would.
Of course they are.
You don't.
Of course they are. You know? But see, that's the issue. They have shaped and fashioned this world. They have imposed the idea of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege on the world. And so now, mostly all the other cultures, just like in the brother's book, Addicted to White, Dr. Fox. And I've been trying to get that, but I'm going to get that book and read it and have him on the program so we can chop it up on in discussion of that particular book, Addicted to White. And just like you said, the Stockholm Syndrome, you identify with your captors. You know, you begin to respect them and love them and protect them and work with them as opposed to working with yourself because you have been fed the notion that who you are is somehow less than or you are inferior. And in order you to have any worth, you must be like Caucasians. And that's what we suffer from. That's our problem, you know? And part of that whole tactic, of course, as you know, Jay, is instilling fear into us.
Well, that's
why
one of the steps.
Yeah, that's why. Well, that's why I think that's the main thing, was why we don't move in the direction that we should, because of the fear that has been instilled in us in terms of what are they going to say? What are they going to do? You know, how are they going to act? You know, and so given those realities, that's why many of us are catatonic. We don't move at all. In fact, a lot of us, I would venture to say, are just trying to find a comfortable corner, a niche in white supremacy, in white extremism. So, you
that's
know,
because that's because you love his trinkets. You want to be able to have the things that he have. But, you know, he's the example of what supposedly success is, which, you know, in reality, success is determined by what you feel is deemed your priority. It should never be nobody else's priority, because why should I want what another man wants? He may not want what I want. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like we have to point that, you know, everything that the white man presents to us, we feel we have to have it, or we feel that we have to be a part of it in order to be deemed successful.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And the thing is that when he gets us the most is, he always trains our best to identify with his culture and not with our culture. And that's why we not getting ahead on the level that we should be, because every time we get to a certain point in status, we're always trying to gravitate towards him, then trying to gravitate towards us and uplifting the next one of us, to the point to where as we can then compete with that oppressor and overtake him. We have no desire whatsoever to put the neck loose on him.
Well, see, that's
our problem.
Well, yeah,
that's our problem. And once you get the realization that he's your enemy and that you no longer want to be oppressed by him and you no longer want to be guided by him, then maybe we'll have a chance. But you got to remember, he works around the clock all the time,
right.
24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
That's right.
To keep us in that position to be subservient to him, and we don't realize that, you know, we hoodwink. We don't realize that we being possessed to be a part of something that is inhumane, that it's based on, because it wasn't built on, you know, anything in regards to fairness, decency, or anything that was natural. It was based on wickedness. It was based on death, destruction, brutality. All of this that the white man has today was built on those principles, which is, you know, just not humane, man.
Right.
It's not natural.
No, it's not. And the problem for us is that we don't understand who we are culturally.
Yeah.
And we've been made to feel ashamed of who we are culturally. We look at Africa, and we look at Africans with such disgust and disdain that we don't want to be that. And yet, Africa has all of the resources. This is a Dr. John Henry Clark quote: has all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. And that is the situation. Africa is not poor. Africa is not poor. Africa is minerally rich more than any other place on the continent. Everybody wants a piece of Africa, but Africans are running away from Africa in droves. American Africans, who are the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet, if they had their act together, could join with Africans on the continent and control those resources. They could control
them. Hey, Oshi, we can't even get to the point to realize that even if we don't want to accept African culture, why don't we create our own culture? Why don't we create something that separates us from this Yoruba mental brutality? Why don't we create something that sets forward a new paradigm for our lives? even if it doesn't want to be based on the principles of Africa or things of that nature, why don't you build an American, a Black American culture based on principles that are humane, that are not like the rules? We don't even get to that point.
Right, because the culture we've created is a subculture because of the alienation, the alienation of the dominant culture. And so, therefore, we have this, just like, and I'm going to probably do this one day, deal with a piece called I Just Want to Be Black. And what that really means is that because Caucasians said they are white, and of course, in their definition of being white, because they're not white, they're Europeans, they're Caucasians, but in their definition of being white, they are pure, they're honest, they're God-fearing, they're loving, they're all of these attributes. But of course,
that's
black.
That's the biggest lie in the world.
Right, of course it is. But of course, wanting to be black, and of course, one could argue that the opposite of being white is being black, and then of course, being black is being evil, being dirty, being sullied, being mean. These are the negative attributes of being black. But yet, in this society, there are some of us, they really want to be white, but they sure in the hell don't want to be African. They want to be black. They cool. They like the clothes. They like the cars.
They want to straddle the fence.
Right. They exactly. You know, Stephen A. Smith. You know. Stephen A. Smith, your boy you talked about last night, Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Yeah, but
all these Negroes. All these damn Negroes.
Stephen A. Smith. You know what Stephen A. Smith lineage is, right? You know he comes from a Jamaican family.
No, he comes
from one of those Jamaican families that came to America and that had a certain degree of success. So they really don't believe in certain things, and they don't see themselves on a certain level as American black. They think that they're better than American blacks here and Jamaicans back where they come from. And if you listen to that Negro, that's exactly how he acts and behaves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what he identifies. And, you know, as far as No Neck go, No Neck just, I'll just put No Neck in the class of a Christian idiot. That's all he is. That's really what he is, because you can't never, ever, ever put all of your, I guess, success or talents in the hands of the sky daddy. You know what I mean? And identify all things with the sky daddy. You know what I mean? And it's like I listen to the clown always talking about he's highly favored. Anytime I hear a Negro talking about they highly favored, you need to stay the hell away from them, because their total perspective is that it's because of the sky daddy that they have achieved what they achieved.
Well, see, and that's
they
the thing.
Know what the sky daddy represents.
And
the
see,
Urugu.
Of course it does. Of course, that's why. That's like for not, you know, people now saying no, Jesus could not have been, if Jesus was historical. Let's say it that way. If Jesus was an historical figure, he could not have been Caucasian because of the area from which he supposedly had come from and the time frame from which he had supposed to come from. But let me just say this: whether one believes or not that he is historical, the bottom line is the control of it, of the theology and the imagery is Caucasians. And so even though you want to put some dreadlocks or some dark skin or whatever the hell you want to do, the bottom line is it's Caucasian. And
yep.
And so therefore when you worship them and you worshiping Caucasians, therefore you just believe in the hereafter, because on this lurf, on this plane, this is what you're going to continue to get. You're going to continue to be disrespected. You're going to continue to be manipulated and used. You're going to continue to be at the low end of the socioeconomic scale. You're going to continue to be incarcerated, have the worst health conditions, all of those negative things that are going to happen to you. But for those brothers and sisters, I'm getting some feedback, Jay. For those brothers and sisters
who accept this. They always they believe that they are shielded, you know. But the reality is nobody is, because if it comes down to it, even those rich Negroes, the Tyler Perrys and so forth, they can be down, they can be knocked down too. There is nowhere to run or nowhere to hide if you continue to play in their system. And that's how
Osi, this is the thing that I think people really don't realize. In this society, in all truthfulness, there has to be an Oprah Winfrey, a Tyler Perry, and some of these other Negroes.
Of course.
Because then if there's not, what will you have black people strive for?
Right.
That's why there's so few of them. Right. I mean, if you take into consideration the percentage of black millionaires in comparison with Yoruba millionaires,
There is no comparison. This is theirs, not ours. This system is theirs, not ours. It is there for their prosperity and for their benefit. They didn't create this. Crackers did not create whatever they did around this globe in Australia, wherever they are. They did not create it to be a multi-ethnic, multi-whatever situation. It was created for their prosperity and for their benefit alone. Now, it will give you an illusion of inclusion to pacify. So you can see, just like you say, they can put those folks up there and see that? You too can be like Oprah. You too can be like Tyler Perry. And for all you athletes, you too can be like LeBron. In fact,
that's
not true.
And that's why I truly believe and I feel that diversity is the biggest BS game going on in this country at this time. Because there's no diversity.
No.
There's no diversity. When you got people believing that there's diversity and fighting for diversity, you got control of them.
You see,
because you control that atmosphere.
Right.
You're the one who's in the position to make them feel as though they could come in the door.
They control.
But you can also keep the door closed too.
Of course.
Or kick them out whenever you want to.
Exactly, because they're in control.
If you really want to play the diversity game, you got to have ownership.
And see, we have no ownership.
That's why it's a
we
game.
Ain't running nothing here, Junior. We don't run a damn thing here.
Nothing.
In fact, our condition.
Like if you look at the movie industry, if you got 100, if you just use that as an example, if you got 100 top level executives, I can guarantee you, in that 100 top executive, there's no more than 10. If you got that many,
I don't even think that many. I don't even think you got that many.
I can think off of the top of my head that that probably there's three that I could think of that now may have that type of power, but I don't know if they really know it. I could say in a sense maybe four. You would have to place someone like Oprah in that position, Tyler Perry in that position, Byron Allen in that position, what it's all. To be truth and told, Byron Allen is probably the most powerful out of them all. And this cat that just made the movie Black Panther,
Cougar,
and you may have one or two that's a step below.
Yeah, Ryan Cougar.
But out of 100, there may be 10, and there may not even be two or three that could green light anything they want to. The only one that could probably green light anything that he wants to is Byron Allen. Why? Because he has ownership of distribution.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, the rest of them are beckoning on the approval of the Yoruba in a certain extent because of one thing. The Yoruba controls the distribution. That's even with Tyler Perry.
Right.
He can create it. He can manufacture it. He can do all of the things necessary to bring it to us.
He can't distribute it because he can't get it in those theaters.
He can't go to the daddy to distribute it.
Exactly, because he can't get into all those venues, all those theaters to show his stuff. Yeah. Well, Jay,
now, Brian Allen is the only one who could facilitate that because he owns a distribution company that has the network necessary to place product. Now, will he use that to the benefit of liberating black people and their ideas? Hell no.
No. No, he won't. Although he did say something about somebody I saw online, and I forgot what it was, and it kind of made me chuckle because, you know, I remember Byron Allen, you know, and when he used to be on the, like, those TV gossip. Entertainment gossip stuff they used to do, you know.
He got a show where he has comedians come in and talk jokes. It's still on to this day. I mean, to be honest with you, I've studied the guy to the point to where as I got to give him credit for what he do. He is a very smart businessman in regards to the economics and the ownership and the production of products.
Jay,
phenomenal.
Then him buying the Weather Channel was a good move then, you think?
You don't know what he's going to do with it. If you look at it, I don't think it was that great of a move, but he must have something in store for it.
Right.
Because you got to realize he didn't get all of the real pieces with it. Because the Weather Channel was, I guess from my understanding, the network was worth $1 billion. But he didn't purchase, understanding, the app nor the website and maybe some other content. But, I mean, he purchased the Weather Channel, I would assume, to be able to do some other things. But I tell you, if you want to start an entertainment business, the model that he used is the best model there is. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, let me just say this about him, all the others. All of them were in that position. All of them, because none of them have done anything to help liberate the African mind. All of them have been in constant service to the same situation that have put us in this mess. And once again, they're used by this system to prop them up to even you too can do this, knowing all along that they can't. But just like all the other stuff, you know, just like the Caucasians who don't want redistribution of wealth because they believe that they too can be a billionaire, a millionaire. So no, they don't want to disrupt this system that has been created for the benefit of Caucasians.
That's the white man's fantasy and the white man's crutch. Yep. And that's why he will never change this situation because he wants to be in the position to enjoy the benefits of oppressing African people if he ever, as they say, gets lucky.
Yep.
And
agreed.
That's exactly the manner in which they do their thing. And you know something, Oshi? We never, ever come into contact as a people and understand that.
We don't, and you're right.
You know?
Because we don't understand
I got to run, man.
Okay, Jay.
Before I go, I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to hear a Wednesday show, but all I'll do is say this, brother. I respect Martin Luther King. I think he gave a lot to our people. But to be honest with you, I'm sick of hearing about it. Because for 50 years, we've been following that dream, which I call a nightmare. And I don't understand why we as a people are still looking at him as an example of how we move forward, man. I mean, come on, man. Seriously.
Well,
that's the problem that we really need to address. And I hope on Wednesday you address it, OC.
You know I will. Jay.
Believe me.
Jay, you know I will. You know I will.
In all honesty, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous for us to be 50 years past his death and to be in the same position that
exactly.
we did. And
no,
at what
no,
he did
it's worse.
As an example.
It's worse. Our condition is
that,
worse.
I can't say that without getting in total trouble. I'm just trying to be cool. It's a tragedy. I'm just trying to be cool about it.
All right,
it. That's
way to
why
go, Jay.
I'm sick of hearing about it. And you know something, to be honest with you, I'm sick of hearing about all of them. Because the bottom line is, why haven't we evolved in 50 years to have better leadership, a better understanding of the situation we're in, a continuous growth on what was given us in the past to be able to move ourselves forward? You're supposed to take something and improve on it. Why the hell in 50 years we haven't approved?
Because we're in,
what Elijah Muhammad said, what Malcolm, what you know, God, why haven't we approved on it?
Because we are in the midst of our enemy. Jay, we are in the midst of an open sworn enemy. Everything we do in their situation, which they dictate, will be negated. They'll just give you an illusion. They give you an illusion of the inclusion and your ability for upper mobility, but it is not there. It's an illusion, Jay.
And Oshie, why haven't we got to the point as a people to understand that and to be able to counterbalance that and to move forward to liberate our people? That's what I'm saying. That's what me and you both understand.
Right.
But for some reason, our people don't understand.
No, they don't.
And they want to continuously, 50 years later, worship Martin Luther King. I can understand why you want to worship Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and all of them, because them are the crackers that put the system in place. But what did the people do? They evolved it. They made it better for their position. When the hell are we going to realize that?
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, Jay, I want to take me a break. So listen,
all
I appreciate
right,
you. You have a good day and continue to listen. Peace, my brother. That's wow. Me and Brother Jay, I tell you, man. We're going to take a break. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll have more discussion after this. This is a little bit of a jam. We need some jam. We get Larry Graham, Graham Central Station, jam. We'll be right back.
my friends call me Butch.
Ho! We're back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You were listening to Larry Graham, Graham Central Station, The Jam. Oh, man. I tell you, I love it. Ah, welcome back, brothers and sisters. Of course, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. This evening, on Mondays, we have Acres of Diamonds from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Right after that, at 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black, 365. Tomorrow night, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then 9 p.m. on Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it's not me, it's Sister POC, Revive. And then, of course, Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening, right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And glad to be on. Yeah, did you watch the games this weekend, man, the women's tournament? The sister who busted two game-winning shots, Sister Umawali. Ogumawali, Sister Ogumawali is from Milwaukee. I know her father. He is a principal at a high school. Actually, when I first met him, he was an assistant. But now he's the principal of that particular school, and saw him last night on the post-game celebrations. Saw him, and man, she busted one on Friday, you know, at the last second to beat UConn. And UConn they've only lost two games in 3 years. UConn has only lost two games, and the last two losses were in the Final Four of the NC2A tournament. Last year, when the little sister from Mississippi State busted that last second in overtime. In fact, a serious graphic was UConn has never won in the tournament in overtime. In the NC2A tournament, they have never won in overtime. I think they're like 0-5 or 0-6, something to that effect. And so Notre Dame kicked them out with Sister Ogumawali, Emeka Ogumawali. And then last night's game, which they were losing, they were down by 15 to Mississippi State. And of course, Mississippi State was trying to win the championship that they lost last year to South Carolina after having beaten UConn. They played South Carolina in the championship and they lost. And so now here they're in the championship again, this time against Notre Dame, and they were up by 15. Notre Dame battled back, and Ogumawali didn't have a good game. At one time, she was 1 out of 10, you know. But considering how they've been decimated by injuries, you know, she's their scorer. And so, man, did she hit a shot. And I'm quite sure you've seen it, just because it was on the news. And if you haven't seen it, you can definitely catch it on a sports channel, whatever. But it was a big shot. She did it. And, of course, Kobe had tweeted her talking about Mamba, the Mamba mentality, when she hit that shot. I mean, she stepped back on that one and then, bam, busted it clean. You know, right, girl right in her face and lady right in her face. And, you know, and so, and of course, Kobe tweeted and said, it's not complete. You know, yeah, you did that one, but it's not complete. Well, she sealed the deal last night, no doubt. She dropped the mic. Mamba out for real. A Mamba's mentality. Yep. Ogumawali. She went to a Catholic school too in Milwaukee. You know, they're Nigerian. You know, he taught in a public school. But you know, of course, the majority of the teachers, I would venture to say, particularly us, I don't care about the Caucasians. I'm talking about us.
I'll venture to say the majority of the teachers who are us either filter their children into the best public school, which there are very, very few, although Rufus King High School, which is a school that I went to, but it wasn't like that back then, but it came is that way today. It's one of the top schools in the state and probably in the top 50 in the country. And because, in fact, that public school operates like a private school. The parents in that school give lots of money. They go on trips around the world. They have all of the activities. They got band. They got this. They got that. You know, high academics and so forth. But if you can't get them in that, get them in those parochial schools, you know. Yeah. March Madness. Of course, on Saturday, Chicago Loyola's run was ended by Michigan. And Michigan, I saw something on a new program on ESPN, Jalen Rose and Michelle Beadle and Greeny. And the three of them, they have a new program. They just started. And one segment before they went off, like about in the last half hour of the program, was this Caucasian mentalist who had, before the tournament started, had put his prediction in an envelope, put it in a sealed envelope into a briefcase, handcuffed to a gentleman, you know, and it was going to be open today. And, of course, it had Michigan playing Villanova. Although the mentalist, he's also a Michigan fan as well, of course, Jalen Rose, because Jalen Rose is the Fab Five. He played at Michigan. He's from Detroit, you know, but he said there, Villanova is going to dust Michigan tonight. That's who I've chose. That's who I chose from the beginning, although I'm always down with a so-called underdog team and really like that. I mean, I was happiest, you wouldn't believe, when they beat Virginia. And I liked Virginia, but I was extremely happy. Because number one, that was the first time that a 16 seed, the lowest seed, and they had to play a game to get in there, you know. And they kept battling and kept battling. No, I'm sorry. The 16 seed, wasn't Virginia. That was That was University of I apologize, that was University of Maryland, Baltimore County, UBMC. No, UMBC, UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore. That's who beat Virginia. But because Loyola, Chicago, they were 11th seed. And so the tournament ends tonight, but I would want our listeners to always remember this. Anytime you hear about the NCAA tournament, anytime you hear about the NCAA playoffs, or anytime you hear the damn word NCAA or NCAA or National Collegiate Athletic Association, you think March Madness really is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on. March Madness is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on, making tons of money off the labor of unpaid black people. That's the deal. That's the bottom line. The NCAA has so much damn money, and these coaches get paid so much money. The NCAA, I told you last week that they have their own floor. They have so much money. They don't. When they go into a venue, I'm quite sure the venue has the floor of, let's say it's a major arena like Atlanta here. They have the Hawks. They may even have a Georgia Tech. I think Georgia Tech plays at the Phillips. I don't know. But let's just say it this way. They don't use what they have. They bring their own stuff. The first round, they'll have first round, second round, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four. Around the country, they bring their stuff because they have so much money. The NCAA has billions of dollars, contracts with ESPN, CBS, Fox,
to broadcast games. All the others, I mean, their endorsement list is so huge. In fact, the John Oliver Last Week Tonight piece a couple years ago, I was going to play it, but like I said, the only problem I had with it, and it's a major problem for me, is the fact that these young men were given so-called light courses so they could stay eligible, and one was an African history course, which, of course, they should be taking any damn way, and the other one was a Swahili course. And, of course, he made light of it, which, of course, made me say, F you, you know, because I think we should learn Swahili. I think we should learn a language outside of the language we have here. That's why, to me, back in the day when we were kids, we used to talk pig Latin. If some of you probably can remember that. But the bottom line is March Madness, the NCAA tournament, its football programs is a stirring reminder of what America was founded on, making tons of money off the labor of unpaid African people. I read an article from about a year or so ago about how America became so great because of cotton. Because of cotton, America dominated the industry. That's how America became so rich. And I ain't talking about the South. The South was where it was grown and picked. It was in the North where it was shipped around the world. It was in New York. We have a caller. Let me take a caller here. Okay. 267. Caller.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie.
Ah, it's my good brother, Ralph. How are you doing, man? How was your weekend, man?
Man, my weekend was great, Brother Oshie.
Good.
And you know, it was funny. I was sitting there watching the females game, and I felt sort of bad for the big sister.
Me too.
She missed that. Yeah.
Oh, she missed that bunny,
they
man.
Put the camera all in the girl's face.
I know.
Yeah, I felt bad for her.
I sure did.
The layup.
I mean, she missed a bunny, man. She was right there.
Yeah, my grandson could have hit that one, man. Hey, Brother Oshie, I'm calling about something Jay said earlier, and I have a, I agree with him. I agree with him 100%. We talk about Africa, and I have even a problem with calling it that. Because I somewhere in the back of my mind, and I've gotten conversations with this with plenty of people, I believe that was a name given to that continent by the European.
Let me just say this. Do some research, because check out Renoko Rashidi, Ivan von Sertima, Dr. Clark. They've all said, no, that is not true. Africa is not named after Scipio Africanus, who they named him that. Because that was the name of Africa. He was a conqueror, supposedly defeating Hannibal, you know. But no, that is not the case. But others say the name of the continent is El Kabilan. The name of the continent is Ethiopia, you know. So, okay.
Well, Ethiopia, I got into a discussion about it with this one guy, Sabir Bey, who I often have to correct, but he was telling me, I said, no, but if you talk to the people there, they tell you it's called Abyssinia before they were conquered
exactly.
In the 40s. Now, you know, that's what I got from Ethiopians. I don't know, you know, where he gets his information from, but, you know, but what I want to talk about, what Jay said, we need our own culture. And I agree with that 100%. If you look at most of the cultures on the continent, we don't have nothing in common with them, Brother Oshie. Even I heard a Nigerian brother, you know, he said it's tribal first. Man, if you didn't belong to the Igbos, he didn't want really nothing to do with you. Yeah. And if you talk to a Yoruba, they say the same thing about the Igbos.
Right.
They don't even like intermarrying. That's not a culture I want.
No.
I look at what Ghana has just done far as allowing the United States to build a base there for $20 million a year, which meant they just signed over their land to be conquered. I don't agree with that culture. We have our own distinct culture. It's just that it's been perverted. We have a culture. We have our own culture. We treat each other with respect. We had love for one another at one time. We have our own culture. I don't think we have to adapt anybody else's culture. We have our own. We just, it's just been perverted, and we got this stuff called the what they call the hip hop culture and all this other garbage.
Yeah.
We have our own distinct culture, Brother Oshie, and we know what it is. Deep down in the hearts of all of us, we know what it is. It's just that it's been perverted, yeah, sidetracked, and you know, we are brilliant people, but we become so ashamed of ourselves. We're ready to dress up in some dashikis and pretend that we're in Wakanda. No, we are who we are. We are a beautiful people, and we can adapt to anywhere. It's just that right now we have been, like you said, underneath this system, this oppression, we have been ashamed of ourselves. Other people see our culture. They know exactly who we are before we speak. If I walk around in the streets of anywhere, they say that's an American, African American. They know that automatically by looking at the African looks at us and know our culture is different than his. Matter of fact, some of those jokers hate us worse than the Caucasian. So, you know, and I was listening to Jay talk about the Haitian. I was listening to Jay talk about some of the Jamaicans. Yeah. I remember when they had that drug trade up here in the 90s, man, in late 80s and 90s. Man, them Jamaicans were shooting the brothers down like they was nothing and saying they weren't their brother. So, you know, man, right. You know, I don't want nobody else's culture. I want my own. And I agree with Jay 100%. I don't have to pretend to be, I don't have to accept nobody else's culture. They got theirs, I got mine. And we are a brilliant, beautiful people. I wish we just accept that. We've been through a lot in this country. We've been, and we, you know, any other culture would have been destroyed by
now.
But we have been tough. We have been under the microscope of this oppressor for so long. We're being shot down in the street. Look, they gave the Indian smallpox. You can't even find the Indian no more. We've been under worse oppression than the Indian. The Indian just couldn't. Well, whatever you want to call them, Native American, whatever you want to call them, because they don't like us either. My only fight I got in the Navy was when I had to fight an Indian for calling me the N-bomb.
Yeah.
You know, I'm telling you, Brother Oshie, if we only knew who we were, and we all know,
yeah,
we all know what we have deep in our hearts, like you said, we've been, you know, adopted Christianity, and that's another, that's sad. That's really sad. All that waste of time and money yesterday in that tradition. I heard you on Friday. I didn't get a chance to talk to you. But, you know, look, this is it. Here's Easter. That's why it comes on different days of the week. A Christian will put their hands in their ears when I tell them this. Easter, and the reason why so-called Jesus did not die on a certain date, because you see the dates of Easter always changes, is because it's the first Sunday after the first full moon after the equinox, what they call spring.
Right.
That's all Easter is. That's why it always changes. It comes on the first Sunday after the first full moon of spring, which is the equinox.
Right.
And that
coincides.
People don't want to hear that.
And that coincides with the Passover, which, of course, is bull, too. Because it has been proven there were no people or Hebrews or anybody enslaved in ancient Kemet or ancient Egypt. That didn't happen. But because of the plagues. Now, you know, every Saturday, the day before Easter time, they showed the Ten Commandments movie from 1954 or 55, whenever it was made. And I remember as a kid going to the theater, watching it because it was in Technicolor and Panavision and, you know, so long, and it had its own intermission and all of that stuff. And you would see, you know, all of the animation that was done at that time. Well, of course, they made a new one with Christian Bale as Moses and so forth. And this one, of course, they showed you the plague. They showed people with boils and scars and you know, and sores all over their body. And they showed the locusts eating this and that and the other, you know, because of the technology and the graphics that can be done with green screen technology. They can put you and show anything, you know. But it didn't happen.
Right.
It did not happen.
The only thing passed over Egypt was the sun.
I love it, Ralph. I love it.
You know what I mean? The only thing that passed over Egypt was the sun. So, you know, but we're so perverted by foolishness, man. Seti got a new thing out, and I listened to him, and he talks about Good Friday. And, man, I thought that was the biggest comedy I ever saw in my life. I mean, yeah, he uses some of the language.
Right.
But he talks about Jesus being on the cross and being nails in his hands and his feet. What's good about that if that's happened on a Friday? You know, and it's a shame that even – I'm glad that they have people out there that's getting the point across to our youth.
Yeah.
Because, man, our culture's been perverted, brother. It's been snatched away from us.
Oh, yeah.
But it's up to each and every one of us to find out his true self. I have a book by, what's that brother, To Yourself Be True. It was sort of feminine brother, but he had a lot of books back then. A Muslim brother. He had a lot of books back then, early 90s. And, what's that brother's name? Oh, man. And he wrote the most dynamite book because he says, he basically tells us, you know who you are. Just accept it. And he goes into depth. When I get that, the name of this author, because I got the book home on my shelf. But Dr. Somebody, and you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, Naeem Akbar.
Yes, sir.
Naeem Akbar. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Dynamite book, man.
Yes, it is.
Dynamite book.
Yeah.
And that gave me some acceptance as a young man.
Yeah.
To be who I am. I don't care what you think about me. I don't care if you hate me. That's your problem.
Right.
I'm going to do what I do to do what I do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know. That's right, Ralph.
I'll get you the name of that book, brother. I ain't gonna take up too much of your time. I just had to call in and say, like, I agree with Jay.
Yeah.
We need our own culture because we're under a situation. See, when the African comes from the continent, he want to join forces with the
Caucasians.
I work with enough of them. He want to join forces with them to oppress us also.
Yeah.
We need our own culture. Yeah. We don't need to identify with anybody else. So, that's just where I'm at with that, man.
I hear you, my brother.
Yeah, but look, you enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. I appreciate it.
Apologize for taking up some of your
time. Never.
I just had to call in, man.
Oh, never. You know? Hey, Brother Ralph, you are welcome all the time. And just like when I chop it up with Jay, I chop it up with you no matter how long it takes. If I got more callers waiting, I'll get to them. You know?
Right.
Always a pleasure,
right,
brother. Peace to you.
You enjoy your day, man.
You too.
I'll continue listening.
All right, peace. Oh, man, right on, Brother Ralph. I mean, the bottom line, though, in terms of culture, the deviated culture that we have, and not only deviated, demonic, because of how we treat ourselves. And of course, it is a subculture because of the alienation of the dominant culture that does not want to allow us. It takes from us. It appropriates all of the things that we have. That's like a lot of the things that Caucasians might do that some might argue is kind of cool is because of us. But hey, I believe I believe that the real issue is culture. I don't use the word race because it's culture. And of course, Caucasians impose their culture on humanity. That's why the Christian religion is what it is. That's why the belief in being Caucasian or European is what it is, because they impose it. Wherever they came to impose it on, theirs was negated. It wasn't about assimilating. It wasn't about integrating. It was just about, bam, I'm hitting you. This is the deal. And if you don't like it, so be it. If you don't accept it and acquiesce to it, it's the deal, and you'll be gone. You know, but let me get back to the March Madness piece, because I heard a piece, this sister, and she was talking about how much money is being made by the coaches. The coaches in the NCAA basketball and football, they are the highest paid individuals in the state. These are public institutions. They're public. They are the highest paid individual in the state. They make more money than tenured professors, presidents, chancellors, you name it. They make the money, along with athletic directors, all his assistants and so forth. So here's this. Let me play this sister for you. And it's interesting because the reality is that this is the situation.
I wanted to run it past you. All right, come close and pay close attention, okay? I did some research today, and just, you know, the whole NCAA thing bothers me, how they treat the players as far as not paying them a salary and they have money for the coaches. So I took it a step further and I started doing some research, and I want you to pay attention to these numbers, okay? 11 million, 8 million, 7 million, 6 million, 5.6, 5.7, 5.6, 5.4, 5.1 million, 4.7, 4.6, 4.5, 4.2, 4.2, 4.1, 3.9, 3.7, 3.7, 3.6, 3.5, 3.5, 3.3, 3.3, 3.2, 2.9. Did you notice something? Out of 25 coaches, 25 highest paid D1 coaches, one was black. 90% or more of the starting players on all of those teams are black. But the people that are benefiting the greatest are white. So I came up with this idea. I said, okay, well, how about, since we can't get the NCAA to pay them, and that's fine, how about all of our top athletes start going to HBCUs, right? So I pulled up the salary for the HBCU. What do you think they are? Between $100,000 and $200,000. I think one of the highest paid makes $200,000 and some change, and he's at Howard. Why do the black coaches that coach black kids make between $100,000 and, let's say, $300,000, but the white coaches that coach black kids make millions? You know what I'm saying? Like, does this not make any sense to you? So I figure it's our responsibility. I know somebody's going to blame it on slavery and post-traumatic slave syndrome and all that other stuff, but at the end of the day, it's our responsibility to take a look at what we're doing wrong. If our kids are the money makers, our kids need to go to schools that will inherently grow black communities, black families, black dollars. So my ultimate goal from here on out is to figure out a way to make sure that every single top athlete in the United States of America ends up at an HBCU. I don't know how I could do it. I don't know how we can do it, because we love shiny stuff. Black people love shiny. We love shiny and new. Dangle a new facility in front of us and we'll come running. You know, it's a 50% chance that the student athlete is not going to get a degree. But hey, they got a new facility. They got a new stadium. They have a new this. They have a new everything, because all the top athletes go to those schools. And the only one benefiting from them going to that top school is the coach and the school. So I need your guys' help, because we have to figure out a way to get our athletes into HBCU systems so that we can start building our schools, so that those schools can become the shiny and new facility that everybody wants to go to. Because there's no way that one out of the top 25 D1 coaches should be black when 90% of the kids on the field that are starting are black. We have to acknowledge what's going on, and then we have to make a change. There's no reason that our kids that we groom to grow up and become superstars, as a mom of a son, I know since he's 5 years old, he's been in track, he's been in basketball, he's been in football. He spent tens of thousands of dollars over the course of 18 years to get them prepared to go to college. And then we ship them off to the white school for the white person to make all the money off of our hard work. And we don't even see it because we're too busy being blinded by the sparkle. It's time to get over all that and see, how are we benefiting long term if only 50% of our sons are graduating and 100% of the dollars is going right into the institution? Somebody help me understand this.
That's Sister Shani Hall and her rant on
what's happening. And to some degree, I agree. In fact, last year's Super Bowl with Atlanta and New England, the pregame was one of the best things that I had seen. If you can remember, the pregame had the brothers who are in the Hall of Fame coming from HCBUs. Walter Payton, Jackson State. I could go on. And all of these guys' names you'll know, Bobby Bell, Mel Blunt, all of these guys went to historically Jerry Rice because they couldn't get in to the larger institutions. I'm old enough to remember when there were no brothers in Alabama or in the South period, Tennessee, Auburn. And now they can't function without them, and the money is huge. The coaches, when she started off at $11 million, that's Nick Saban. The one under him is the one. I mean, just like last night when I saw Emmert, who was in charge of the president or whatever he is with NC2. I said, I want to punch him in the face. There's two people I want to punch in the face. Him and Dabo Damn Sweeney from Clemson. And the reason why I want to punch them in the face is because of their insistence and their denial and them being adamant about not finding ways to help these young men get some of that damn money. The hundreds of millions and billions of dollars that goes into the NC2A. The ones she were talking about were football coaches. But basketball coaches too, particularly like John Calipari, who signed a huge multi-million dollar contract. So I'm saying to you, when football season comes back around in a few months, tonight ends the basketball season. What I'm talking about, what I'm proposing is the two big money-making sports of basketball and football. What I'm talking about are the two huge, or what they call the power conferences, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Big 12, the Southeastern Conference, the Southwestern Conference. These conferences with Texas and Oklahoma, the Big East, these big power conferences, you know, they should offer the players, those students, not to be a, quote, student athlete when the majority of them don't graduate. I remember a piece, and of course they tried to clean that up, but a piece that came out about 15 years ago. In fact, I love Jay. Jay reminded me of the name of the brother who played at Creighton for 4 years. Played at Creighton for 4 years. Once he was used up, they kicked him to the curb, Kevin Ross. And he went to back to school. I mean, elementary. He went to elementary. He went to Marva Collins School in Chicago, the preparatory school. And you seen him sitting at a desk. He's 6'8" with the kids. But now he's a teacher. He went and got his degree. He's a teacher. But that's the deal, what I'm saying. Making tons of money off the labor of unpaid black people. And so to me, this is how I would correct this. Number one, get these salaries in line. I don't give a damn what they say about what these coaches provide for the university. Good. It's not the coaches. It's the players.
It's the players. And because these big-time coaches, the good or the better players want to go there. They're on TV all the time. They believe that going there will – because the bottom line to these kids who go to these schools, it ain't the school. They ain't on play for no damn school. They play because they believe that they'll make it into the NBA or the NFL. They ain't rah-rah because, okay, you might have a few. But the bottom line is they're going – the three top prospects are going to Duke because they believe that Duke University, the top three top prospects, where me and my grandson went last week to the McDonald's All-American game, the three top prospects, E.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson, and there's another young man. The top three, one and done. Once they get their year in, they'll go to the NBA and make money. And off that 1 year at Duke, they'll have plenty. They'll be on TV. See, the sister said, have these young people go to ACBUs. That ain't happening no more. That was, when you saw those brothers at the Super Bowl, that was it. That was the brothers at that time who couldn't go to these colleges and these universities. They couldn't go to Texas, Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Kentucky. Hell, I remember the 1966 game of West Texas with the five brothers of the movie Glory Road. Don Haskins. I remember that. I watched that game with pride. I hate Kentucky. I hate Adolph Rupp. That's why I hate him today. I don't hate you one time and then I'll be cool. No. And I know hate's a strong word. But if I have a disdain for you because, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But it ain't about that. It's about what is right. Because this system is not. This system has always been about usury. Always been about manipulation and undermining. And taking advantage. And so when they seen these men, these young men coming up through here, oh, I remember distinctively how it changed in Alabama. When Alabama, because that's why in 1963 Rose Bowl, I cheered for USC against Wisconsin. They had Ron Vander Kellen in Wisconsin, the quarterback. They had Pat Richter, tight end who played with Minnesota. You know, they had all these players, all Caucasian. USC had some brothers. Mike Garrett, running back. They had brothers. That's why USC is my favorite team to the day. Jimmy Ray was a quarterback a little bit after that. So Bear Bryant, seeing this talent issue. That's what I'm saying right now. If the brothers who are in these super big conferences, if they say, we are not going to play until something is worked out, you think, let me tell you, if it's just the Caucasians, it's like watching the Ivy League. Ain't nobody going to watch that. They watch these games because of the brothers. They watch these games because of the athleticism, the quickness of the brothers. So Paul Bear Bryant calls to, what's his name? It was a coach at USC at the time. It'll come to me, you know. And he said, why don't you bring your boys down here and you play us? Because he was trying to tell his boosters, his benefactors, hey, we need some of these athletes. No niggers. We don't want no niggers. We don't want no niggers on the field. So he said, I will prove to you. John McKay. He calls up John McKay. McKay brings them guys down there. Sam, Bam, Cunningham, all them cats. And they dusted Alabama. And then one of the first persons they got on the team was Ozzie Newsome. Was a tight end, played for
Cleveland for a long time. In fact, he was the general manager for the Ravens when they moved from Cleveland to Baltimore. No, it is us. We are entertainment. We are the money. Damn it. I wish we could say, listen, all of us collectively, we know, because when you are individual, you could be played and manipulated. But if we're collective and we say, no, we're not going to play a down, we're not going to bounce a damn ball until you come to grips with what our true benefit is to these universities. And this is my proposal. Of course, there could be better details worked out, but as simple as this. My proposal is, I play for the university for 4 years. After my eligibility is up, with a serious insurance policy, if I get hurt in basketball and football, in the power conferences, the one that make all this damn money, the one that pays coaches $11 million and $8 million. $8 million, Dabo Sweeney, because he won the champ. I want to punch him in the face. He was so adamant that these kids should not get. When these kids get paid, that's when I leave. I hope you would be gone in a minute. But here's the deal. You give them their 4 years of eligibility. Once their eligibility is done, they give that university guarantees them or works with them to get an advanced degree. They have their scholastic. Once the athletics is over, they go through the scholastic, they get a degree. While they're going through the athletics, they get like a stipend that is put away. The classes they go to are for management, how to manage money. They don't go to they go to classes, but it's not like they're gonna be like they got to get all this stuff and exams coming up and all this other pressure. No. Even the Caucasian Josh Rosen said this is some pressure that a lot of these guys don't need. And he's rich. He said that's a tough thing to do. But brothers and sisters, we're about to close down. I hope that you've enjoyed the program today. I hope that you will listen on Wednesday. My good brother Frank Jones will be with me, Franklin Jones, and we'll be talking about the impact of Dr. Martin Luther King. It'll be that day 50 years ago that he was assassinated by the government, and we'll talk about that impact and what it means today. So, and Friday, we're going to have a guest on Friday, and his name is Kenneth Marshall. Kenneth Marshall is out of Dallas, Texas. I've seen some posts he had. He also writes a couple of books. So we'll talk to Brother Kenneth Marshall on Friday in the beginning hour of the program. So stay with us right here for African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. And not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people is the mineral wealth that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. And it is ours that it should be managed by us as African people. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.